saw my baby then. She was stretched out on that long white table, so young, so sweet, so fair. Well, let her go, God bless her. Well, wherever her soul may be, she could have searched this whole world over.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Haunt Heads, the podcast that goes bump in the night. I am your host, Janine Mercer, and today I have a very special guest with me. I think that she's going to try to feel us out and see how we are and see how weird we are. We're going to kind of go from there and see maybe if she wants to come on board and do some more haunted, creepy shit with us. So I would like to welcome Miss Katie McCauley.
Hello.
Hello.
How's it going?
It's going.
I'm so glad it's the weekend.
Yeah, you're good. It's the weekend?
Yeah, this is just such a long week at work and stuff. So this is nice to just sit back, relax, say stories that are really scary and freak each other out a little bit.
Yeah, there you go. I'm all for freaking each other out. All right, so normally Mimi and I fight over who gets to go first.
Oh, wow.
I didn't bring boxing gloves. So I think probably what we will do is I'll go first so you can kind of see how we do it.
Yeah,
how we do it to it.
I'm ready.
It's all pretty simple, you know. We just read the creepy shit and then everybody oohs and ahs over the creepy shit, and then
let's
then the next person goes. Cool. All right. Before we start, is there anything that you want to kind of tell us about you or anything you want to...
Oh, fun. I should have thought more about actually introducing myself, but I didn't. So I am Katie. I am Wiccan, I think is good. So, like, I'm all up on, like, the spiritual side of stuff and things. Mm-hmm. I've had a lot of paranormal experiences myself. That we actually bonded over. I think, like, the first time
yes.
we hung out, we started talking, like, ghosts mm-hmm. and all that fun stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just about it. I guess, you're maybe 25 at the end of the month. Oh, I didn't even think of it. My birthday's Halloween. That is so perfect for this.
There you go.
I didn't think of that. So,
yeah.
In heaven. I think that's about it for now.
Okay.
They can learn more about me as we go.
All right. Cool. So, what have we got here on the... On the table. What are we doing here?
I came prepared. I brought my red ginger incense to get us in like a nice mood, and then I got my giant chunk of clear quartz that I found at the Goodwill for like $2, and I was like, "You did not know what that was." And then I can never tell if it's supposed to be pronounced cyanite or kyanite, but I like saying cyanite because then it sounds like cyanide.
Oh, yeah.
But it's just like a very energizing stone, and I was like, "Well, just get us in the groove."
Yeah.
Everything will be
looks kind of flaky.
It has it's like one of the more delicate stones.
Strange texture.
Yeah.
Cool.
But
All right.
So we're ready.
All right. So my piece this week is called, I titled it A Spirited Discussion, An Exploration of Spirit Photography. I really enjoy deathbed photography.
Mm-hmm.
I have several books on the topic kind of squirreled away. The wife doesn't like them, so they stay squirreled away. But yeah, I guess I got interested in it when I was like in my teens.
Mm.
I don't really know why I was attracted to it. I guess I kind of felt like it was an interesting way to memorialize and remember the dead.
Well, have you seen that movie, The Others, like with Nicole Kidman?
Yes.
Because that's the first time that I heard about it.
Mm-hmm.
Spoiler alert, I guess. If you haven't seen the movie by now. But like,
well,
I think that's kind of when I like first heard about like deathbed things, like with the big, oh my gosh. But like, so maybe that's like happened when you were a bit younger.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, my grandfather, he used to build houses.
Mm-hmm.
And there were several times that he would go in and do like remodeling jobs and things of that nature, and he would find like things under the floorboards, like old newspapers or whatever, and he would find old boxes of photographs.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember he brought home a box one day, and it had just like all these pictures, and some of them were tintype.
Oh, Mm-hmm. It's like really old.
Yeah, like pretty old. And there was a bunch there, like five or six, that the people were sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't figure out, why would you take a picture of somebody who was asleep? Unless you were a total creeper.
Yeah.
But he was like, yeah, you know, whatever, you know, look through them. So we looked through them, and my grandmother decided that they were creepy, and then that was that was about the extent of it. Then we were done. But I have personally always been drawn and attracted to kind of that side of death and memorialization.
Yeah.
That kind of ephemera. So I decided that because we're kind of building up to Halloween a little bit here, and I do have a special piece for Halloween.
Fun.
So, so stay tuned for that. But I decided that I was going to focus on not only early photography, but the process of spirit photography, which was kind of a farce. But, you know, I mean, people did it for good reason.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the way that I try to think of it. I also looked at ectoplasm.
Ooh.
Because that's a part of not only spirit photography, but mediumship that a lot of people in the 19th century, like in the Victorian era, would go to sit in dark rooms with mediums and commune with the dead.
Oh, yeah.
So very, very so, creepy. Like,
as one does.
Right. Like you would.
Yeah.
You go and you sit in the dark with a perfect stranger and you channel your deceased loved ones. That's
hey, what else are you going to do on a Friday night, man?
Yesterday I moved 3 mattresses, which was amazingly fun.
Oh, wow. I washed all my dishes. So, I think we're neck and neck for who had the best Friday night. But I'm excited. I don't know actually that much about those, so I'll get to learn stuff.
Oh, yeah, there you go. There you go. All right. So, I kind of rooted this back into my own personal experience because I like to put myself into my pieces, you know, when I can.
Yeah.
I guess I should begin by saying that I don't have many photographs. I've always found that rather odd. There are photos of various incarnations of me, but not of those around me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not entirely sure what this is, but it might be because photos are a little creepy. I mean, you know, okay, think about it. You snap a photo of your friend, you have it printed, you frame it for your wall so that your friend can stare at you dead-eyed while you perform daily tasks. See? Creepy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. I think that's why I've come to enjoy creating photo albums on social media, because Facebook allows me to choose when my friends stare at me.
Yeah.
And the choice makes it less creepy, I think.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Also, didn't like some tribe of Native Americans believe that actually taking pictures of someone, like, took a little bit of their soul.
Oh.
So I feel like
I think I've heard that.
Yeah, like, I think that's part of it, too. Like, why it is so creepy. It's because, like, it's just, like, exactly who you were in that moment that then someone else gets to have. And it's like,
right.
I don't want them to have that.
Yeah, yeah. It's weird.
Yeah.
So when my great-grandmother passed, we had several items from her estate, including a bunch of photos in these small little gilded frames.
Mm-hmm.
They were very pretty. The photos were black and white. One of them was from a church function because she was a member of the Salvation Army, which, for those of you listening who don't know, the Salvation Army is actually a religion. If you're a part of the Salvation Army, then you are a member of the Army of the Righteous. And my great-grandmother was indeed a member of the Army of the Righteous and wore a uniform to church and was very serious, very dedicated to it.
Interesting.
Yeah. There's a photo where she's at a church function and she's drinking wine with a few other people. There's also a bunch of others depicting important events in her life. So, like, the one that always jumped out at me and simultaneously gave me the heebie-jeebies was a photo of her smiling face with her eyes staring out from the photo with seemingly no purpose. I think it was taken at church.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty sure a lot of her photos came from kind of that part of her life.
Yeah.
It was creepy. So it hung in the hallway in a frame given to my great-grandmother as a wedding gift. And I always felt like it was watching me. Like, the eyes just seemed to follow as I passed. And I frequently ducked under it or like sped past it to avoid it. And it didn't help that the nail that the photo hung on was bent, so it would just fall off the wall.
Oh gosh.
Randomly.
That would freak me out.
At least that's what I reasoned.
Yeah.
That it fell off the wall randomly.
Yeah, tell yourself that. Make yourself
right.
believe it.
Make yourself feel better. So a few years after my great-grandmother passed, my uncle got married. And it's an event that calls for much photo taking. Mm-hmm. I spent at least an hour standing amongst my relatives while the photographer took shot after shot after shot. And it wasn't until we went to pick up the photos and began flipping through them that we noticed something was a little odd. Mm-hmm. So at the top of all of the group photos, like kind of hovering towards the right edge of the shot,
yeah,
was this white fog.
Ooh,
creepy. So it looked as if someone had been smoking, mm-hmm. and like the cloud was lingering, but nobody was smoking around us.
Yeah.
And we were just like in, it, there was like a, they did a wedding outside.
Oh, okay.
So they just had the backyard set up and we were just standing by the trees and there was like no like cars going by. So no exhaust, nobody smoking, no like random candles burnt, like
yeah.
nothing.
Not
absolutely
indoors,
nothing.
Like if you're inside,
yeah.
like if you're out in the open, that's weird.
Yeah, absolutely nothing. So the photographer told us that the film that he used was high quality. And so was the paper that he printed the photos on. So there was really no explanation. And in frustration, my grandmother actually asked the photographer to come by the house, made everyone get back dressed up again. And we spent hours in various parts of the yard and in the parlor recreating some of the shots. She's a bit of a perfectionist, my grandmother. She wants everything right the first time. And if it's not right the first time, then she kind of loses her mind. So, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
The photographer left, and he set about the task of developing the photos, only to find out that the same thing had happened.
Huh.
So, my grandmother is losing her mind. She's furious. And so she's standing in the hallway. We had, like, a little telephone table.
Yeah.
Back when rotary phones were a thing, and, like, you left the holder for the rotary phone on the table, and then you ran down the hall and into your room with the receiver to get privacy. Yeah. So she's standing there by this little hall table, and so she's just yelling at the photographer over the phone, and she's standing in front of the photo of my great-grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
So suddenly there's a crash, and I look down to see that her photo was on the floor, but it didn't look like it had just fallen from the nail. It actually looked like it had jumped from the wall.
Oh, God.
And landed, like, at least a foot and a half away.
What?
Perhaps my great-grandmother was upset that somebody was trying to crop her out of the family photos? I don't know. Perhaps someone was smoking around the time the photos were taken. There was some strange, you know, trick of the light or something mm-hmm. like that. But something tells me that the photographer himself didn't intentionally add fog to the photos.
Yeah.
You know, and if he's using new film and he's using paper that just came out of the package
yeah.
and he's developing it properly, then there's absolutely no reason why this should have happened.
For sure.
The real funny thing about it is, you know, even if he had for some reason added this
mm-hmm.
to the photos, that's not something that he would have randomly thought up. Because
yeah.
that sort of thing, the capture of deceased individuals in photos, was quite popular in the 19th century. And in some cases, the faces that appeared on those photos, the finished products,
mm-hmm.
They weren't even faces of people who had died.
Oh.
Yeah. The practice of spirit photography originated as a farce in the 1850s on stereo cards that depicted specters hovering over the heads of unsuspecting individuals. Now, a stereo card, you used to, it was kind of like a Viewmaster.
Okay.
Like, you know, a little red thing, the
yeah.
little white thing on the side that you press. So it was kind of like that, but you could view a one-dimensional image in kind of two dimensions. So it would kind of...
Like in Tarzan? Like when...
Oh, I have no idea.
Oh, in the cartoon Tarzan, she's like showing him all these things. He's like looking through a thing. So it might
yes.
be...
Yeah,
like
it had a slide on it.
You can put
yep.
it further or closer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
Wow.
So you literally just held it up and then
yeah.
it had a slide on it and you could pull it closer or push it. Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
They were simply for fun and amusement.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't meant to be taken seriously. until a man named Mumler figured out that he could actually turn it into a money-making endeavor. This is from Wikipedia. Spirit photography was first used by William H. Mumler in the 1860s. Mumler discovered the technique by accident after he saw a person in a photograph that he took himself, which he found was actually a double exposure. There's actually a very famous photo by Mumler of Mary Todd Lincoln with her husband's ghostly form standing behind her.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. It's very famous. If you Google spirit photography, it comes up instantaneously. It's like right there.
Cool.
Yeah, it's pretty neat.
So old Abe hung around?
Old Abe, yeah. Old Abe apparently hung around. Well, according to Mumler, he did.
Yeah.
Seeing as there was a market for it, Mumler started working as a medium, and he started taking people's pictures and doctoring the negatives to add lost loved ones into them, mostly using other photographs as a basis. Mumler's fraud was discovered after he put identifiable living Boston residents in the photos as spirits. Yeah. Another spirit photographer, William Hope, born in 1863 and died in 1933, was quite famous for his work, and many people visited Hope in order to capture their deceased loved ones on film. The psychical researcher Harry Price tried to defraud Hope by marking his photographic plates with the logo for the Imperial Dry Plate Company Limited.
Mm-hmm.
So he literally put a logo on these photographic plates that he was going to use.
Yeah, that way he could tell if they... Yeah.
Then he could tell if they'd been doctored. But Price must have switched them out for another set because none of his images contained the logo.
Oh.
Or any of the identifying marks. William Stanton Moses, a cleric and spiritualist, claimed that the process of spirit photography was directly related to a substance called ectoplasm, which allowed spirits to come into physical existence. This substance is said to form when a medium is in a trance-like state and expresses through the mouth, ears, and or nose. It's gauze-like and flowing, and to be perfectly honest, really fucking creepy.
Yeah, that sounds gross.
Yeah. It's said that ectoplasm begins clear or invisible and then gradually darkens and becomes visible. And it drapes itself over the entity with which the medium wishes to communicate.
So, like, you could, like it, like, makes, like, a shape?
It's literally like, you know how the typical ghost is a white sheet with the two eyes and the, yeah.
Yeah.
So, the white sheet is essentially the ectoplasm.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
My only frame of reference for ectoplasm is Ghostbusters.
So. Yeah, me too. But it's like green and slimy.
Yeah, but this makes more sense, though. It seems more like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
It almost seems more natural.
Yeah, this is like bright green.
Yeah,
like white and like smoky. That makes more sense.
Yep. And I mean, at the time, that's what a lot of people thought.
Yeah.
That, hey, you know, well, this has got to be real. I mean, it looks so real. Look at that.
Yeah.
Now, mind you, they're sitting in rooms that are lit by, like, a single candle with fucking black curtains everywhere and, you know, whatever. So, I mean, really, anything that you saw, you could be like, whoa, look at that, you know, and then, it was a big deal. Sometimes, mediums stated that ectoplasm had a very strong odor. And it couldn't exist in certain light conditions, as it would simply deteriorate. So darkened rooms with, you know, that were lit with candlelight were the weapons of choice for these individuals. And given that the participants could barely see what was happening, the excuse that ectoplasm was light sensitive was very convenient.
Oh, yeah. Like, oh, yeah. It doesn't work like that.
Sorry. Yeah, no, we can't turn on the light for you to go to the can, you know, because the ectoplasm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Psychical researcher Gustav Geely defined ectoplasm as being very variable in appearance, being sometimes vaporous, sometimes a plastic paste, sometimes a bundle of fine threads or a membrane with swellings or fringes, or a fine fabric like tissue. Arthur Conan Doyle described ectoplasm as a viscous gelatinous substance which appeared to differ from every known form of matter in that it could solidify and be used for material purposes.
Gelatinous is just like a weird
gelatinous.
Word. This doesn't sound good.
Mm-hmm.
It can be this.
Right, yeah. It can be anything. Yeah. science doesn't recognize the existence of ectoplasm. And researchers have duplicated the effect using items like muslin or gauze. But it sure is interesting that mediums at this time thought to create such a fantastic lie. Mm-hmm. For someone in the 19th century who had just lost a loved one and wished to communicate with the other side, the appearance of ectoplasm must have just blew their minds.
Yeah.
Like, right. Completely and utterly, you know, I mean, people are grieving. Mm-hmm. They're kind of out of their head a little bit.
Yeah.
And then you add, you know, the charlatan who's like, I can create ectoplasm and make Jimmy come back from the dead. And then...
Yeah, that's always actually what pisses me off about things like that, is just how much you take advantage of people who are, like, hurting and mourning.
Yeah.
But, yeah, mm-hmm. like...
There are a lot of mediums that, I mean, today...
Yes.
Do that.
Yeah.
More often than not, actually, the people that say that they're mediums and they're able to communicate with the other side are just reading you.
Oh, yeah, like, for sure.
I think it was Teresa Caputo, Long Island medium.
Oh, yeah.
She went to some venue or something. Apparently, she got flipped off.
Good.
she should have been.
I mean.
because, you know... They're very selective mm-hmm. of the people that they put on the main floor. She's, you know, walking around, like, interacting with all these people on the main floor. And there was a lady in the balcony who, like, she's not going to go up in the balcony.
Yeah.
She does a floor show.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, no, you know, I'm not going to go up in the balcony. And the lady flipped her off.
Good.
Because she'd spent, like, 25 minutes.
Yeah.
Just, like... telling people complete bullshit that they couldn't link to anything. You know, I sense, you know, somebody committed suicide.
Yeah.
You know, is there anybody here whose loved one committed suicide? And then, like, two people would stand up, and then eventually she gets on with the bullshit, and then those people gradually sit down.
Yeah.
Because they're like, this is not, you're not telling me anything true, you know? You're just telling me shit so that you can charge me $17 for a plastic cup of wine.
Oh,
like,
my
that.
God. That's, like, more expensive than a bottle of wine.
It's like eight. Yeah, the.
Well, the wine that I.
Right? Well, the lady that wrote the article that I read, I forget what her name was now, but she was saying that her and a friend went to the show.
Mm-hmm.
And she told her friend, you know, well, I bought, you know, you bought the ticket, so I'll buy, like, snacks.
Yeah.
So they go to the snack bar, and the wine that they got was, it was $17 for 10 ounces.
Oh my God.
And when she went home and Googled the brand of the wine, it was like $8 a bottle. Yeah. Yeah.
It's the cup. That's just really
expensive. It's the plastic, it's a plastic cup and the plastic straw.
Clearly.
That's why we need to get rid of the plastic straws, because obviously my Starbucks cappuccino is so fucking expensive because of the straw.
Yeah, it always comes back to the straw.
Absolutely. See, we just need to, like, be huge babies and drink out of sippy cups.
Yes. Mm-hmm. World peace.
World peace and sippy cups.
Yep.
So, according to Wikipedia, the Society for Psychical Research Investigations into Mediumship exposed many fraudulent mediums, which contributed to the decline of interest in physical mediumship. In 1907, Hereward Carrington exposed the tricks of fraudulent mediums, such as those used in slate wiring, table turning, trumpet mediumship materializations, sealed letter reading, and spirit photography. In the early 20th century, the psychical researcher Albert von Schrecknotzing, investigated the medium Eva Carrier and claimed that her ectoplasm, quote, materializations were not from spirits, but the result of idioplasty, in which the medium could form images into ectoplasm from her mind.
Oh.
Yeah. Schrecknotzing published the Book of Phenomena on Materialization 1923, which included photographs of this ectoplasm. Critics pointed out that photographs of the ectoplasm revealed marks of magazine cutouts, pins, and a piece of string. Schrecknotzing admitted that, on several occasions, Carrier deceptively smuggled pins into the seance room. The magician Carlos Maria de Heredia replicated the ectoplasm of Carrier using a comb, gauze, and a handkerchief.
Oh, wow.
She was creative. She was like, you know, what do I have in my junk drawer today?
Yeah, like, what can I, I'll just, like, reach and grab something, make it work.
Well, my husband left this plastic comb, and I have some gauze, and oh, look, a handkerchief.
Yeah.
Carrier wasn't the only one duping onlookers with this homemade ectoplasm and the like.
Yeah.
Other mediums of the time would use potato starch smoothed over textiles, egg whites, soap, gelatin, even cutouts from newspapers. Some would swallow and regurgitate cheesecloth in order to wow their attendees.
Oh, no. Like, I've been here for all of it. I'm like, yeah. I draw the line at...
Wait for it.
Oh, there's more.
Wait for it.
Oh, God.
There was also one that was found to have hidden cheesecloth in his rectum. And pulled it out when the time was right.
Oh, my.
Yeah. Let me just let that sink in.
Oh my God.
For a moment. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean,
where do you keep your cheesecloth?
Yeah. First date question.
Oh God.
So...
Mm-hmm. That to me seems like a second date question.
Oh, you're right. Yeah.
Personally. Yeah. I don't want to divulge where my cheesecloth is on the first date. That's not really. You know.
Yeah. But definitely before the fifth.
Definitely before, well, I mean, before you have to do anything like hanky-panky-wise,
yeah.
Because
you
then you're
your
like,
hanky.
Wow. Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. That's gross.
Oh, my God. Okay. You may remember that this kind of, like, seance and mediumship was sensationalized by the 2002 film A Haunting in Connecticut, which I loved. It was a fantastic movie. There's also a Discovery Channel documentary of the same name, but it's all based on a true, quote, I'm using air quotes, true story. I wrote about it and I presented info on it on a past episode of Haunt Heads, but it added to an uptick in mediumship and seances.
Yeah.
Because, you know, anytime you have a very popular film like that, I forget how much it made at the box office, but it did... really well, and I feel like it came out close to Halloween or like something.
It was like a Friday the 13th or something.
It came out on a very specific day. They planned it obviously that way for it to be released at that time, and everybody was like, "Oh yeah, you know, you gotta go see A Haunting in Connecticut." And yeah, it was a good movie to see during Halloween time. It's basically about this young man that moves into a house with his family.
Of course.
They lived further away, and he gets diagnosed with some form of cancer.
Uh-huh.
And in order to be closer to the hospital and to make it easier on him, they move into this house, and then they find out that the house used to be a funeral home.
Oh,
and
that's fascinating.
There's, like, all this stuff. There's also a feature of some, I believe it's pronounced orchetta, orchata or something, box of eyelids. They find a box of eyelids, but it looks like the pasta.
Oh my
god. The orchetta.
Oh.
So every time we go to Aldi to buy the particular pasta, I'm like, we need to get some eyelid pasta. And Joanne's like, okay.
Oh my gosh.
I'm sure that they just fucking painted it.
Yeah.
And put it in a cigar box and we're like,
yeah.
Eyelids.
Yes.
Nice. And we're done. All right. So from thoughtcompany.com. Over his controversial career, the mediumship of D.D., I'm going to kind of discuss a little bit about D.D. Hume. It's spelled, it looks like home, but it's actually Hume. There are some instances of the mediumship that he performed throughout his career, and I thought that they were very interesting. There's kind of a lot here, but I can read a couple. Let's see here. In a well-lit room before Professor David Wells of Harvard and three other spiritualist investigators, Hume caused a table to move all about, even though he stood nowhere near it, and it took all the strength of two witnesses to restrain it. Upon its release, the table levitated completely off the floor for several seconds. When Wells and two others sat on the table, it continued to rock, and they could find no scientific explanation for this experience. In 1852, Hume first demonstrated self-levitation. Witnesses watched in astonishment as he rose a foot or more above the floor. When they tried to hold him down, they too were lifted off the ground.
Oh my gosh.
During seances, he was able to make phantom hands appear. Sitters were able to, people who were sitting around the table were able to feel them. In 1857, he held a seance in Paris with Napoleon III and his empress. The empress held a spirit hand that she recognized as her dead father's because of the characteristic deformity of one finger.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. He was able to elongate his body by as much as 11 inches.
I don't like that one.
I don't like that one either. In a July 1868 seance, in a normally lit room of the home of a client, the host's elderly mother was levitated in the chair in which she sat. In December 1868, Hume gave what is perhaps his most famous performance at his apartment in London. He conducted a seance for three respected gentlemen. After some conventional spirit apparitions, Hume began to walk around the room. His body elongated, according to the witnesses, and then Hume rose off the ground. Returning to the floor, he then went into an adjoining room. Men heard a window open in this room and shortly after saw Hume apparently floating in midair outside their window. The apartment was three stories up. Hume opened the window from the outside and then, quote, glided into the room feet foremost and sat down.
See, like, you're not supposed to do that in front of muggles.
Also, in a demonstration that he did many times, Hume could hold white-hot embers in his bare hands, and he was even seen to plunge his hands and face into the hearth fire.
Yeah.
And would, like, move it around as if he was bathing in water. Yeah. And then apparently his skin showed no signs of injury whatsoever. So.
I mean, if I could shove my hand into fire and it didn't do that, I'd do that, like, all the time.
Right. Right? So would I.
I'd be like, look at this.
I'd be like, and now I can also do this. And yeah. Mm-hmm. Of course, Hume's shenanigans were explained for the most part. Because when he lifts the elderly woman in the daytime, they couldn't debunk that. There was nothing that they could do. Yeah. So some of his shenanigans were explained, but not all of them, by Harry Houdini. Because that was his thing.
Yeah.
You know? Though he couldn't explain some of the levitations, he literally gave zero fucks when it came to exposing these people. He absolutely had no patience for it.
Well, yeah.
He thought that these mediums were like the lowest of the low, the scum of the earth, and he tried to expose as many of them as possible. Harry Houdini actually also exposed the Fox sisters. The knockings, the Stratford knockings.
That sounds familiar.
I did a story about that for Haunheads too a little bit ago, but yeah, it was literally just them like cracking their joints and like cracking their ankles to respond to people in the audience. So like they wanted to talk to their deceased loved ones and they'd say, okay, you know, two clicks for yes, one click for no, and they would get clicks. Sadly, many fell for these tricks and they paid large amounts of money to mediums just desperately seeking that one more message, you know, from their deceased family members and friends. I am still not sure how you could mistake a scarf and a rubber glove for ectoplasm. I don't know how, but I suppose if the lights were low enough, you wouldn't know what you were seeing. And it's no surprise to me that the exposing of this aspect of mediumship led to a rapid decline in physical mediumship in the Victorian era. Now, with all of that said, don't get me wrong. I know that mediums are still very much a thing. I'm well aware that there are people in this world who will defend the practice to the bitter end. I'm not saying that every medium is fraudulent, nor is I'm saying that you going to visit a medium is a waste of time.
Uh-huh.
I'm simply saying that if you go to a medium that insists on operating in near darkness and buys stock in cheesecloth and rubber gloves, that person might be a charlatan. So, yeah. That is spirit photography and ectoplasm.
Very nice.
Yeah, fascinating stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I honestly don't know how people got away with so much, particularly the person that cut the pictures out of the magazines and, like, stuck them on cheesecloth.
See, but if you think about it, like, you think about how movie, like, effects, like, they used to be what we now are like, oh, no, that's not, like, good at all. But, like, at the time, people were like, oh, my gosh, it looks so realistic.
Right.
Even though, like, now we're like, you can see the freaking zipper.
Right, yeah. But, there's,
so
there's
it might be something, like, along to that. Are you ready to hear?
I am as ready as I'll ever be.
Okay, well, for my first thing, I decided to do The Witch's House, which is actually here in Milwaukee, or rather in Fox Point, and it's the home of Mary Knoll. Okay, so I first heard about it because I came to Milwaukee from growing up in the middle of nowhere, like northern Wisconsin, I used to drive around at night just to clear my head.
Right.
And all of a sudden, this like student came up to me one day and was like, "Don't go driving." What road was it? He's like, "Don't go driving down Beach Street because if you do that after dark, you'll be bad." And I was like, "What does that mean?" He's like, "There's the witch's house." And I was like, "But anyhow,
what?"
So, in a quiet suburb of Milwaukee, there is a house covered in engravings and hangings, encased within a barbed wire fence.
Oh.
If you peer into the yard, you will see sculptures of long faces, humanoid shapes, groups of children merged together, and skeletal figures painted on the walls. For reals.
Wow.
When you pass by it, a shiver may run down your spine, and you won't know why, but you probably just, like, put your hands in your pocket and walk away real fast.
Right.
So, basically, it's the home of Mary Knoll. She is an artist and an eclectic introvert. Well, she's dead now.
Right.
But she, just made all of that art herself. She decorated it in a style that was a mixture of whimsy, surrealism, and abstract shapes.
Oh, okay.
And not only is like, oh, her house, a lot of people in Fox Point and the surrounding area are like, that's haunted. Really haunted.
Huh.
So,
I mean, I did look at some of the photos there.
Some of the photos
that you have are of the interior?
Yeah.
Too?
Yeah. She decorated the whole thing.
Wow.
Yeah. So we're going to start with some background because I like to research and that's what I do. So
right.
Mary Knoll was born in 1914 and she died in 2001 when she was 87.
Oh, wow.
She was very eccentric and creative, but she actually graduated from the Art Institute of Chicago, like with like a Bachelor's of Fine Arts. So
right.
She like knew kind of what she was doing. Her dad was kind of a dick. So she like goes to art school. And she, like, learns how to do all this stuff. And she comes home, and her dad does not let her hang up any of her artwork or in any way change the family house to, like, with the stuff that she literally just went to college to learn.
Oh.
So, but then her parents and her brother all died in the 1960s, which is kind of sad, but she got the family home.
Right.
And I personally think that part of it was just a big, like, ha 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 ha, you're dead, you can't do anything about it. But she started, like, decorating it, like, super, like, interesting and crazy. And, like, she like, made a lot of unique and bizarre works of art. But, yeah, she didn't just decorate, like, her yard, which there's, like, these huge statues in it of just, like, faces. There's, like, some really creepy ones where there's these kids that kind of look like they're all, like, mushed together weird and stuff like that.
How much you want to bet that all of that shit comes alive at night? Particularly the smush ball of kids. Something tells me that they probably...
Yeah, that one gets me. I saw that and I actually purposefully didn't put a picture of it in my notes because I was like, I don't know. I don't need that one. But she also decorated literally almost every single inch of the inside of her home. She like had framed chicken bone skeletons in her parlor and a skeletal figure guarding her basement and just like pretty much everything by the end of her life like was super decked out. And she was able to devote all her time to this because her parents left her a lot of money. So she didn't really have to worry about finding a career or anything. She was able to spend her whole life just making and creating art. And a lot of her neighbors, because this is like in a little quiet, fancy, rich people-ish suburb of Fox Point, people did not like what she was doing. Because
they didn't
like having like the melded ball of children in like their area and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And Eventually, though, they actually had to put up, Mary did, a barbed wire fence because teens would come in at night and they would just, like, destroy stuff. And at first, she was like, well, she actually liked being able to redo some of it, but eventually they just, like, were, like, setting things on fire and everything. God. So she had to put up a fence. But it was really funny because since she was a really big homebody and she, like, was very introverted, so people around started calling her a witch. Mm. And she actually found this so funny, she made a mosaic piece that said boo, and she, like, put it right in front of her front door because everyone, like, thought that she was a witch. And a cool thing is, actually, when she died, she donated the rest of her fortune, like, to Milwaukee schools so kids can learn stuff about the arts, and it was, like, $11 million.
Oh,
this,
wow.
Like, the Mary Nolan Scholarship is still a thing.
Yeah.
So, that's
makes
the background.
Makes me wonder, though, how much of that money actually went to, because they're constantly cutting arts programs.
Yeah, I know. It's just, but it's cool of her, like, that she wanted to continue with that, because she spent her life kind of doing it.
Well, right, and the fact that, you know, her parents necessarily weren't entirely supportive of what she was doing.
Yeah.
Then, you know,
Yeah, for sure. So, then we'll move on to, like, some of the stories about it. Dun, dun, dun. So, basically, she just lived there until she passed away creating art, and then she had to put up the fence because of hoodlums in the neighborhood.
Right.
So, there's a lot of different, because people didn't understand what she was doing. So they kept trying to come up with reasons why she was, like, doing what she was doing and why, even after she died, it had such a creepy vibe. Because it's like, I don't know if you've ever gone by it, but it's creepy.
No, I've never actually seen it. I've heard other people talking about it, but I've never actually, you know, physically gone there to see it. I would like to go there and see it.
You can go with someone who is not me. So we'll get to why. But I'll pat you on the head and be like, have fun. But, okay, so there's a bunch of different stories about it. But basically, like, as I was researching, and again, like, the college I went to is really close to it. So I heard a lot of, like, the stories about, like, oh, the witch's house, the witch's house.
Right.
And there are three things that remain constant through, like, every single story you hear. The one is, if you drive by, do not stop your car. Do not do it, because that will allow, like, the energy and, like, the spirits, like, that are in, like, the area to, like, latch onto your car and come with you.
Oh.
And number two is, don't look through the gate after, like, night, after it's dark out. Do not look through the gate, because you're not going to like what you see, which is why I think it's, like, probably is, like, the giant ball of children.
Oh,
like,
well.
Like, just, like, come alive and...
I mean, let's be perfectly honest here. Yeah. Who really wants to see a giant smushed ball of children? Not me, personally. I'm not keen.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, no.
But some of her stuff is actually pretty cool. Like, she has these really abstract, like, dinosaurs that are, like, really funny and stuff.
Oh.
But, yeah, and then the other one is this thing, like, as you drive away, don't look in your rearview mirror. Which I think is just common sense. If you're at a, like, a haunted location, you shouldn't just, first of all, mirrors.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's its whole own thing. But, like, so just drive away and don't look back. But I found three main stories where people were trying to figure out what was going on and why it's so creepy. In the first one, it said that her husband and son drowned in Lake Michigan, and she created the sculptures to keep, like, watch over them and honor them.
Oh.
She was single, and she never got married. So I was actually really annoyed at how prevalent that one is. Like, that was all over, and, like, she didn't have a husband. But so that one drove me crazy, and it was on so many of the different sources. I was like, no. But then another one was that under each human sculpture, there is a corpse of a hoodlum who trespassed on her land.
Oh.
And that, like, she, like made the clay things of all the people that, like, she murdered, and she was a murderer. Which was, like, that's so nice
right.
to think about your neighbor.
Right, yeah, fantastic.
And then when we get to, like, the last two, these are the ones I'm like, okay, I can buy that a little bit more.
Right.
There's one, which is that Mary's father, Leo, haunts the home. Because after he died, she spent her life changing the home, which she didn't like. So some people think that even though she's not alive anymore, he's still there and he's still pissed because it's not how he left it. And to me, I'm like, that would make a bit more sense.
Yeah, that does make sense.
And then the fourth piece is what I was told originally, which is that she died, but her spirit, like, remained because it wants to protect her home and her safe place still. And, like in death as she did in life. Like, in, if you were respectful and, like, nice, you didn't need to fear her, but, like, just don't ever fuck with her house. Just, like, just be nice.
Yeah.
Be nice. So those are, like, the four big overarching things. And then I was thinking, I was like, I have, like, some of the stories, there are a whole bunch of stories about it. And we're going to name my friend Mark, because I don't know anyone named Mark, so it's a good name for a person that we'll just call him Mark. He told me that he once actually was driving by, and he parked in front of the barbed wire and heard someone behind him say, "No!" really loudly. So he was like, "Okay!" And he sped away and has never gone back. But he's always been, Mark, oh my guy Mark, has always been really just like, yeah, if he's saying no, then you're not going to be able to change his mind. But he didn't really believe in a lot of supernatural things. So him being scared to go back, I was like, I will put stock in that. He literally was like, because I was like, oh, well, I want to see it. He's like, not with me. No. And then a lot of people at my school would talk about how, like, when they went near it, they could, like, see shadows moving, like, if they looked through the fence into the yard. And, like, they could hear, like, bottles falling over and, like, like, shattering. And then my friends, like, in my freshman year, they wanted to drive past it. So I'm, like, in the driver's seat, and I'm driving past it. And they are asking me, they're like, oh, stop the car so we can get out and we can go in. And I was like, no, because it had such a bad vibe. So I didn't bring them in, and then we just left. And then, however, my one friend, we're going to call Vanessa, she didn't believe me that I had a weird vibe. So I was like, okay, what we'll do is we'll go to it and we'll drive by really, really fast. And then you can kind of like get like a quick idea of what the vibe of the place is.
Right.
And then we'll go on. But as we were driving past, like, I was still had my pedal on the gas, the same thing, but the car slowed down to where it was almost completely stopped. And, like, I swear on a stack of religious texts that, like, someone, it felt like they put their hands on the trunk and, like, pushed down on it, like they were trying to hop on the trunk.
Yeah.
And I was like, no. And, but, like, I tried, and it took me, like, a couple of tries to actually be able to speed away because for some reason the gas wasn't working.
Huh.
So that's the reason why, since that actually happened and I was actually there, it felt very, like, masculine and angry. So I was like, maybe it is actually her dad.
Oh, maybe. Yeah.
It was, like, a part of it. But it was cool. And it was actually in 2014. They were going to pick up the whole house and move it to Sheboygan.
I remember reading about that.
Yeah. Like, to have it just become, like, an art exhibit.
Right, yeah.
But they suddenly decided and changed their minds and didn't do it. And I researched for over 2.5 days and nowhere will say why. And I'm very interested to know, like,
but why? So do you think that maybe it had something to do with ghostly presences? Or
part of me thinks that it was just society, that, like, she was an eclectic woman who lived on her own and people didn't know how to, like, accept that, so they made up stuff.
Right.
But another part of me, something stopped my vehicle and wouldn't let it move.
And I couldn't. Something happened there.
Yeah. But, yeah, I just thought that, also another thing I think could have happened is, like, there could have been no bad energy there, but then all these kids go there thinking, oh, there's so much, like, bad energy and stuff, and then, like, it will come to stay there. Like, if all these people are going here saying, this place is haunted, this place is haunted, this place is haunted, eventually something might come and be like, okay, cool, like, I don't have anywhere else to be, I can haunt here for a while.
Right, yeah.
So, yeah, that's just the witch's house.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, Fabu.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I'll have to make a point to visit there at some point, because
in the day,
it doesn't matter to me. it doesn't bother me. I've been experiencing paranormal shit since I was pretty young, so I just kind of I just kind of live with it now.
I've had a lot of different things happen. This one, I think it was just like it was my vehicle. Like sometimes stuff will move like that is not, that's not supposed to be moving.
Right.
Or something like that. But like having something actually mess with my vehicle, that's happened to me 2 times. Yeah. And that's what gets me. Because, like, that's how you're supposed to be able to flee. You get in your car
and
you
drive away. Yeah.
Like, one time, my friend and I were driving down this road, and all of a sudden, my wheel started driving itself. And it turned to go down this, like, creepy, like, path. And I couldn't make it stop. Actually, I had, like, take the key out. Because it was just, like, it was taking us down this path that we did not want to go down. So,
weird. Yeah. Is it, are you driving the same car?
No.
That, no, it's different. No. Maybe your car was haunted.
No, those were 2 different ones, because I thought of that. I actually staged my car. I was like, I don't know what it was, but I wanted to go away.
Right? Oh, man.
Yeah.
Oh, so really interesting. Remember the last time that you were here, we had that whole conversation about, like, you know, creepy paranormal shit, whatever. So you left, and, like, 20 minutes later, in the living room, the printer started randomly printing things.
Oh.
I didn't send anything to the printer. Joanne didn't send anything to the printer. It just randomly started printing shit. And it started printing stuff that, like, was from this podcast, like, several weeks
before.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and it just started printing. And I had printed things since then, and I had printed things before then, but it was like the printer had a mind of its own, and it just spat out whatever. Yeah. I was like, oh, Katie brought a ghost.
Oh, hopefully not. Like, I try really hard to, like, keep my, like, energy, but, oh my gosh. Things just tend to, like, just notice me, though, from somewhere, and there's something around, and be like, hi! And I'm like, hey!
Oh, look! Look, it's you!
And that's when I'm supposed to be able to get in my car.
And drive away! Oh, man. Okay.
Okay.
So... I don't think I have anything else for this week. If you guys want to leave us a 5-star review, that would be fantastic. You can hit us up on iTunes. We're on Podbean. We're on Podcast Addict. We're on Blueberry. Pretty much anywhere you prefer to binge your podcasts, we are there. Feel free to check out this story on the Hauntheads blog at hauntheads.wordpress.com. And if you want to hit us up on Twitter, we are at HauntHeadsCast. Beyond that, I think we are done for right now.
Okay.
Katie, thank you for spending time with me today.
Thank you for having me. Talking about creepy shit.
Yeah. The rectal cheesecloth.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Guys, until next time, take care. Thank you so much for listening.
Hey, hang cool, pretty bear.
All right. And until next time, guys, stay spooky.
Out on that long white table.